algebraic closed fields. So we defined notion of to be algebraic. And now, basically, to mimic the same as for fields, all we need is exchange lemma. Once we have exchange lemma, the rest follows. Just look at any book about transcendence basis and transcendence degree, and repeat word by word all the proofs. You will see that all you need is just exchange lemma to give a notion of dimension. So I will just outline steps. So first we define what does it mean to be algebraically independent over A. So set is algebraically independent, I, over A. If for any x in A, x is not algebraic over the rest of elements. In this case, I is algebraically independent over A. And now we can define algebraic dimension of a tuple A. So A is tuple of A1 through AN as the least cardinality of subtuple of A prime, such that A is an algebraic over A prime. It's like smallest subtuple that generates A over A. And, well, exercise show that this minimal generating subtuple or its size is the same as the size of maximal independent over A subtuple. The same as minimal generated set has the same number of elements as the maximal independent set. All we need is just exchange lemma. If we increase base, then of course this dimension can only go down. Because some elements which are independent over A may become dependent over B. What is very important and very useful, we have additivity of this algebraic dimension or number of maximum number of independent elements in A. Dimension of tuple equals dimension of B over A, so for pair AB, plus the dimension of A over AB. It's additivity. Again, all we need to do it just to use exchange lemma. All proofs are quite elementary here. So now we defined this algebraic dimension, which is analog of transcendence degree of A over A. So next step is to define dimension of definable set. Unfortunately, our structure M can be too small. The same as in algebraic geometry. If you look, for example, at Q or just algebraic, the field of algebraic numbers, then transcendence degree of any tuple is zero. So you don't have enough algebraically independent elements in the algebraic closure of Q to define dimension for varieties. We need to look at so-called generic points, or we need to increase our field. It works nicely for complex numbers, because C is big enough. We have plenty of independent elements. So now we are going to work in some elementary extension, M tilde, which is kappa saturated. Let me explain you what it means. So we have our structure M, and we go to some M tilde, which is kappa saturated. Kappa should be bigger than the size of M. All we need is just to have enough independent or generic elements. So kappa saturated means if you take any subset of the universe of M tilde of the size less than kappa, and now take any set of formulas over A, so gamma of x is a set of formulas over A such that every finite subset, let me put gamma of x phi I belongs to some index set take some family of formulas over set A, so that every finite subset of gamma gamma 0 of x finite. So every finite subset is realizable in M tilde. You can find elements in M tilde satisfying all these finite to the formulas. Then for all such gammas, saturation means gamma has a realization. Yes?
The first line, you don't need the K
region. No, we just pick one such. We pick and. The size of the universe of M. Ah, yeah. This one. And this is definition of kappa saturation. Of kappa saturation. There's no any M here in the definition. Make sense? So kappa saturated means any finitely realizable set of formulas over a set of size less than kappa is actually realized. Okay? And to do, because we are interested in properties of sets definable in M, I want to have enough types realized in M tilde over M. Okay? So for example, the ordered field of real numbers is not, well, saturated by any means. So example of not saturated. Not even omega saturated. I can take gamma of x to be the set of formulas x is greater than 0 less than 1 over m. That, well, 1 over m is actually definable over empty set, right? I can replace this statement saying 0 less x plus x n times less 1. And this is just formula without any parameters. Yes? No, kappa refers only to the size of set type defined over. Okay? In this case, my type is defined over empty set. I don't use any parameters. 0 and 1 are in my language. Right? If you look at this type, then any finite subset has realization in the reals. You can always find element which is less than finitely many 1 over m. But we cannot find element realizing all such formulas. This element is infinitesimal. So reals are not even omega saturated. This type of empty set is not realized. So in order to have enough generic elements to do transcendence degree arguments, we need to have enough independent elements algebraically. So we'll go to elementary extension, which is saturated. Such extension always exists. Just compactness argument, throw in a statement saying everything is realizable, you can build a model. So take such M tilde. And now for M tilde, it's also O minimal structure. Take any set in M tilde, defined over small set A, less than kappa, so you have enough independent elements over A, and it's defined ACL dimension of X, analog of 13th degree, so-called A dimension, the maximal possible algebraic dimensions over A, elements in X. Look at all elements in X, and pick one is the maximal possible algebraic dimension. Maximum possible number of algebraically elements in this element. The same as for varieties over C, maximum possible transcendence degree for realizations. So this is done for sets in M tilde. Now for sets which are we are interested in, sets in Mn, you can look at sets X tilde, now in Mn tilde, which are defined the same formula as X in M, just extension of X to M tilde. So now for set in X, we define its algebraic dimension of X to be algebraic dimension of X tilde. Maximal algebraic dimension of realizations in M tilde of this formula. The same as for varieties over Q, we look at points in C. This is our notion of algebraic dimension. What is nice, it is completely invariant on the permutation of variables, just looking at independent elements, and we have, for example, additivity formula. So this notion of algebraic dimension. And all is needed is just exchange form lemma. And now some very basic property. There are two things. This ACL dimension does not depend on the choice of set A, because we required that X is defined over A. If we increase A to A prime, X is still defined over A prime, but it doesn't matter. If you take another set A prime, so that X is defined over A prime, then A algebraic dimension of X over A prime is the same as over A. So you don't need to mention A. X is definable, pick any set, so that X is defined over the set, compute algebraic dimension of elements inside X. And it doesn't depend on the choice of M tilde. It's basic exercise in model theory. And now just following definition of algebraic dimension, all its properties are trivial. Dimension of union is the maximal of dimensions, because we look at maximal dimension of elements. If we increase X definable, we just increase number of candidates for maximal dimension, so dimension may go up for IY. And because of additivity for pairs, algebraic dimension of the product, X and Y, is just the sum of algebraic dimensions. And now, if you take any definable map and look at the image of definable set, then algebraic dimension cannot go up. It may go down. Exercise. And if F is injective, dimensions are the same. So injective maps preserve dimensions. No requirement for F to be continuous, nothing. Just injectivity. It always preserves dimension. One more exercise. If you take K cell in Mn, then dimension of this K cell, algebraic dimension, equals K. So exercise, not very hard. Just by definition of K cell. So this relation between algebraic dimension and somehow topological dimension for cells only. And now, once we have algebraic dimension, next step, we look at topological or geometric dimension. So for definable set in M, you can define dimension of X, geometric dimension, to be largest D, so that D, X contains a D cell. It's not clear a priori. Well, what happens if you take some cell decomposition of X? Can we always find cell of maximal dimension or not? Maybe depend on cell decomposition. Other questions, well, notion of a cell depends on ordering of coordinates. So the question is, if you change ordering of coordinates, are you going to get the same dimension or not? So there are plenty of questions if you define dimension this way. The answer is yes to all of them. It's a very natural dimension. One of the easiest way from model theoretical point of view is going through algebraic dimension. So, theorem, topological dimension, dimension of maximal cell for X, equals algebraic dimension of X. Secondly, dimension D of set, defined by set X, is the largest integer D, so that some projection on MD has non-empty interior. And dimension of definable set X is just the largest possible D, so that F of X has not empty interior for some definable function F. And these are all the same Ds. Dimensions are the same. So having this type of equivalences, defining dimensions, gives huge flexibility how to use it. Depending on circumstances, we can use different dimensions. I'm not going to prove theorem. It's actually a very nice exercise to relate topological and algebraic dimension. And immediately some corollary. Suppose A is definable set. So this one is like general version of continuity theorem, that any function on interval is continuous almost everywhere except but finitely many points. So in general, take any definable function on a set A in Mn, then F is continuous almost everywhere, meaning you can find definable set U in A. So F is continuous on U, and the codimension of U is smaller. So F is continuous almost everywhere, meaning on a set whose complement has smaller dimension. Proof, quite simple, cell decomposition. You can find cell decomposition of A, so that F is continuous on all cells. Pick U to be union of cells of maximal dimension. And the rest will have small dimension, union has small dimension. Second one, for any definable set, dimension of the product is the sum of dimensions. It's very easy to show this equality using algebraic dimension. Using dimension in terms of cells is more challenging. For this one, it's more natural to use second equivalent definition of dimension. Finally, dimension of, well, frontier of X, or closure of X minus X, is strictly less than dimension of X. 3.9 to prove. Why in the frontier of X, closure of X minus X, I think it's called boundary. I'm always confused about boundary and frontier. Then, yeah, so in some books, if you subtract interior, it's called frontier. If you subtract X, it's called boundary. In other books, it's opposite. Sometimes they are the same. So let's just say, okay, closure minus set itself, without any name. So for 3.9, use cell decomposition. If C is a cell, then by using definition, it's very easy to see it is true. Dimension of the closure of a cell minus cell itself is smaller than the dimension of a cell. And now, since X is a union of cells, closure of X is the union of closures. And then it's also very simple. So these are properties of dimensions, and this is very important, dimension of the closure. It's possible to get, for example, some statements about how function behaves at the frontier of a set because looking at the closure of the graph in the product. So, think all about dimension. One more, definability of dimensions. If you have uniformly definable family of subsets parameterized by A and K, and pick any D, then the set where fibers have a dimension exactly D is definable. So to express that dimension equals D, we need to say that some projection on D coordinates has interior. There are only five many projections, we can say it, plus no projection on D plus one coordinates has interior. Five many projections, we can say it in first order way. And this way, we can define all parameters where dimensions of fibers are exactly D. Definability in fibers. Next subject is definable choice. To do definable choice, we stop working in arbitrary or minimal structure. We need slightly more. So we are going to work in a minimal expansion of an ordered group. So we have now, as usually in ordered structures, binary relation inequality, plus binary operation plus, and zero. So that our structure, with respect to these three, well, inequality plus and zero is an ordered group. Every or minimal group is abelian. It's one of exercises. Plus we have more functions, etc. For example, any field is also expansion of an ordered group, its additive group. So we need plus. And now definable choice. Suppose we have uniformly definable family of subsets of MM, XA. Then we can pick for each A parameter by a definable function element f of A, so that if fiber XA is not empty, FA is in this fiber. So we can pick uniformly by a function element in XA for each A, for this function f. Even more, it's done in some canonical way. So if for A and B, we have XA equals AB, then FA equals FB. So we can even distinguish our fibers in parameters. Definable choice, how to uniformly pick elements in fibers over base set. Proof is done by induction on M. So by induction on M. So we also need some one extra element. So we fix element 1, which is greater than 0. And now we have family XA defined uniformly in M, where A belongs to some MK. So for each A, I want to pick element in the fiber XA, but in some uniform fashion. So let's start building function FA. Well, if XA equals is empty, then we can pick just zero. Oops. We cannot pick any element in the fiber. Assume XA is not empty. Then there are many cases to consider. First case, we ask if XA, the fiber, is bounded from below or not. Okay, case one. I got stuck with this board. So, case one. XA is not bounded, bounded from below. So it means our XA, there are two cases, 1A, XA equals minus infinity, infinity. The very first interval in XA starts with minus infinity. It's not bounded from below. Then pick 0. It is there. If not, then we can pick the initial part of XA going from minus infinity. We'll have form minus XA. And this is the first interval. Inside XA. In this case, we pick A minus 1. Yeah. B. Second natural choice. Then we pick F of A equals B minus 1. It's not bounded. If it is bounded, there are two cases. We can look at the very first element in XA. So we're looking at B equals inf of XA. And we ask, is B in XA? If yes, it's a natural candidate. If not, then XA contains interval B to some element. Not. Then XA, the very first part of interval in XA it may be interval from B to plus infinity. In this case, F of A equals B plus 1. Or it may be some bounded interval, then some points and more intervals. But at least we managed to pick some interval in XA. In this case, pick F of A equals 1 over 2 B plus B. Okay? Half point between B and C. So we managed to pick canonically element in every fiber for XA. We didn't care how XA was defined, we just need the geometry of XA. So if two fibers have the same we are going to pick the same points. This for part two. If XA equals XB, FA equals FB. What? Okay. Ordered or minimal groups are always divisible. We have no definable subproper subgroups, non-trivial by exercise. So it means elements divisible by n must be the whole group. Yeah. It's one more property. That's why you can pick midpoint. So we managed to do it for fibers inside M. For N plus 1, it's very simple by induction. Step going from n to n plus 1. So we have this family, XA inside Mn plus 1. Our parameters are in Mk. First, we look at new family. We look at projections. Of the first n coordinates. So we have our xa's mn, well, mn plus 1 in m, and we look at projection mn, ya. So by induction hypothesis, we have function have g from mk to mm for this family, choice for family of ya's. So if ya is not empty, we pick point inside ya. But now we can consider the family. So once I pick, okay, so from xa, I have projection pi onto ya. So now we are looking at the family parameterized by inside YA, I have point GA, I look at it pre-image. So we are looking at family ZA, which is equals to pi minus 1 of G of A. So my G of A picks point here. And now I have one-dimensional pre-image inside XA. Using definable choice for M, we can pick points in the A. This is a sketch of proof, but more or less it's almost complete proof. So this way, definably, we can pick points in fibers once you have family. Plus, if two fibers are the same, function gives us the same point. And our corollary, which is called elimination of imaginaries, suppose you have equivalence relation E on Mn, then we can find definable function somewhere into Mk such that A and B are related if and only if they give me the same values. So all definable equivalence relations are coming from definable map, just kernels of definable maps. Basically, we need to apply definable choice to a family of A classes. Each A gives me it's E class, and now I can pick element in this class by function F. And because of property XA equals MB, if and only if, implies FA equals FB, you'll get this property. So we don't, so all our equivalence relations can be represented as kernels of some functions. One very nice corollary is the curve selection. Take any definable set in MN and take point in its closure. Then we can approach this point in the closure by a definable curve, somewhere from 0 epsilon, from inside X. Always can approach. And remember, all our functions are piecewise continuous. So we can decrease epsilon if needed and actually ask sigma to be a continuous function. And proof is very, very easy. Just definable choice by taking family of balls intersecting balls around A of various radius. So let's say, so proof. of curve selection, 4.3. So we have point A in the closure of X. We are in MN, so our A is actually a tuple. AM. So for epsilon greater than 0, consider set B epsilon of A. This set, so we look at intervals A1 minus epsilon, A1 plus epsilon, AN minus epsilon, AN plus epsilon. So it's typical polydisk of radius epsilon around A. It is open set. And we have uniformly definable set of such, well, I call it balls or boxes, open box around A. And now look at set family X epsilon equals B epsilon of A intersect X. We have uniformly definable family. Because A is in the closure of X, for all epsilon greater than 0, there is point there. They are all non-empty. Definition of the closure. By definable choice, we can now find function for each t by definable choice. This function f, let's say from positive m into mn, so that f at t belongs to xt. Actually, it's exactly our sigma. Once t goes to 0, we shrink our boxes to A, so limit of sigma must be A. It's definable. Curve selection, definable curve selection, follows from general result definable choice. Now, one more corollary, which says, in this case, for definable choice, we need that M is expansion of order group, or minimal expansion. Next corollary, if you take any subset different from zero, now take definable closure. Definable closure means, basically, you take all zero definable functions and add values of these functions at elements of A. To be definable closure means element is the value of some function at elements of A. Look at this new set. This set is going to be the universe of some elementary substructure of M. So I had my set M. Inside we had set A. Now I add to A all elements could be obtained by applying functions, definable functions to A. So we have DCL of A. Now this set is going to be, there is some elementary substructure of M having this set as the universe. This, it follows from the so-called Tarski-Watt test. It can be found in any book. I'm not going to say more about this test. It's very, well, it's actually very, very useful to construct some nice elementary extensions. And now one more exercise. So as I mentioned probably the very first lecture, if you look at arbitrary ordered structures, there are almost no compact sets except for finite sets. But over the reals, of course, Euclidean sets, to be compact is the same as to be closed and bounded. So inside MN, we can define, for example, say, definably compact set. It is definable, closed, and bounded. So exercise show that bounded enclosed sets behave like compact sets if you apply only definable functions. For example, any definable continuous function on a definable bounded closed set takes maximum and minimum values. It's not very difficult, because image of F is going to be union of points and intervals, and if your very right interval is open interval, pick this soup of this interval, and now apply curve selection inside your base set to find curve inside M, so M approaches this value. Because D is closed and bounded, this curve will have a limit point inside B. So basically, curve selection applying to pre-images of F. Give this exercise. So replacing, instead of using compact sets, using bounded and closed sets, and applying continuous functions, we get almost all properties of usual compact sets. Definable choice. Okay, so we finished with definable choice, where we considered all minimal expansions of groups. Now we are going to talk about differentiability and smoothness. So we show that all minimal structures have very nice topological properties. They actually have beautiful smoothness properties. But to define smoothness, derivatives, etc., we need to work in all minimal expansion of a real closed field. Or just ordered field, but because of all minimality, field is going to be a real closed. So from now on, we pick an all minimal expansion of a real closed field. So we have our ordering as relation, two binary operations, plus n times, and usual 0 and 1. Sometimes, actually, we consider field is language with minus for subtraction. Minus is definable from plus. There is no really need. Plus, we may have extra functions. So we're working in all minimal expansion of field. Field itself can be very, very bad. Not Archimedean, not taken complete. So usual definition using sequences don't work here. But in any ordered field, we have topology, we can define notion of derivative. So take open interval I, function f from I to R, and we say it's differentiable at A inside I, with derivative D if this limit exists and equals D. Just the right usual definition of derivative. And as usual, in this case, we write f prime of a equals a, derivative equals d, this limit. Now, it's very easy to see that a point where a function is differentiable is going to be definable. We need to say such limit exists, can be expressed using epsilon delta definition. And actually, derivative is also definable on this set, because it's just the value of such limits. And now, the same as for continuity, you can start repeating some sense, ideas at least. The statement is take any open interval and definable function. The function is going to be differentiable at almost all points, automatically, just because of all minimality. This is the first theorem. Nice properties of differentiability. So proof, how to prove it? So we can consider like right-sided derivative, which allowed only t's greater than 0, and left-sided derivatives approaching 0 from the left. Because one-sided derivatives exist in all points by all minimality, but extended line by infinities. So both these limits always exist, but they may be plus or minus infinity. So to show existence of limit, meaning function is differentiable, we need to show that almost everywhere These two values are the same and actually not infinities. And then limit exists and function is differentiable. So this is what we need to show. Looking at right side limits and left side limits. Equality almost everywhere, and it's actually finite. The first step is to show that these two left side derivative and right side derivative set where they are not equal is finite. They're equal almost everywhere. So if they're not equal almost everywhere, we can find some interval where they're different on the whole interval. Because both this x plus derivative and x minus derivative as functions, they are definable functions. So now we have interval j where they are different. So we have two definable functions, f prime x plus, f prime x minus on j. So we can use Montanicity continuity and assume they are both continuous on some interval, f plus these two functions. And let's assume, for example, that derivative at x plus is greater than derivative of x minus. They're continuous on interval, everywhere not equal, so should be one of them should be above another. So this our f prime of x plus, f prime of x minus. One is greater than another. Continuous functions, so we can pick some element c between them, shrink interval, and assume that everywhere on interval, the actually x plus is greater than c greater prime of x minus on the whole interval j. Okay, j prime. And now we look at function, I call capital F, f of x equals f of x minus cx. Again, definable function, we can shrink again our interval and assume this capital F is continuous. And monotone on some j double prime. And now let's ask a question. It's very easy to see that one-sided derivatives have a property of additivity. So we have that f prime of x plus is going to be greater than zero. Because derivative of cx is just c. It's a linear function. And f prime of x minus is less than zero on j double prime. Looking at definition of this derivative, x plus t minus f of x is positive, f cannot be decreasing. Because we are looking at ratio f of x plus t is positive minus f of x. It cannot be decreasing function. It's positive. On the other hand, the same for x minus, not decreasing, the function is not increasing. So we get a contradiction. It must be constant, and then it's going to be differentiable. So what we have it almost everywhere. These two derivatives are the same, left-sided and right-sided. Well, it may be infinite, the only problem. We need to show that now a set where it is infinite cannot be infinite set. Almost everywhere, derivative is going to be finite. So now we know almost everywhere they are the same. So assume now they are equal at x plus x minus derivatives, but infinitely often they take some value plus infinity or minus infinity. So let's suppose we have plus infinity at infinitely many x's. It means we can find interval where this derivative is going to be everywhere plus infinity. Limit goes to infinity. Now we'll just do picture. A, B. Our function f. We can shrink AB, assume f is nice, continuous, monotone. So here's our f. And for some reason, everywhere the right side derivative of f equals plus infinity. Well, so now we use the same as mean value theorem. We can, because we are in the field case, we can connect these two points by straight line, a fine line, move this line vertically. We are in a closed bounded interval. Once we move up, we must somewhere reach upper point. Or our functions on closed intervals have maximum minimum values. So moving, we are going to reach this case. Right? Just geometric argument. Going up. But now, the slope of this line is some finite number. So I thought I used, okay, that's h of h. Okay, some finite number. This is our line. Let's say it has form cx plus d. Slope is c. And now, if you look to the right of this point, to the right of E, our function f is everywhere below cx plus d. When start computing right side derivative, you'll always get something less than c in this limit, close to it. So f prime of x plus is less than c. Contradiction. We assumed it's infinity. The same works if you take like, minimum value and look at minus infinity. Just depends where to look, at the left or right. Mean value theorem, basically the same argument. It cannot overgrow c. So it's impossible for function to have derivative infinity at infinitely many points. So after throwing away finitely many points, our function is going to be piecewise differentiable. Continue the process. You can also look now at derivative. It's a new function. It's going to be almost everywhere continuous. And now almost everywhere differentiable. So if you pick any integer n, we divide the domain of our function into some finitely many intervals. You can do it. So the function f is CR on each interval. These points a1 through ak, they depend on r. If r grows, we need to divide into smaller and smaller intervals, doing induction. F continues, derivative continues, etc., etc., etc. And yeah, I think it's impossible to do it like uniformly for all r's. So for each r, we have these points. This first calorie. So for usual maps from m to m, all our functions are piecewise as smooth as we want to, picking any R. So it's actually it helps a lot to work because you don't need to care too much if it's C2 or C3. You can pick huge number like R equals 100 and always assume after subdivision F is C100. Who cares? Okay? So this is all for today.